Vegas Bad Boy of Podcasting is an entertainment-based wrestling program. The opinions shared are that of the host and their guests. Some celebrity voices are impersonated and usually not well. This program is not intended for kids and certain adults. Listener's discretion is advised. You have been warned. Now let's get ready to podcast.
Welcome to another edition of Vegas Bad Boys of Podcasting. I'm DJ Impact. I got a couple of bad boys here with me. Sin City Steve, how you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you guys doing?
We're great. Matt Michaels, how are you?
I'm feeling a little fuzzy.
Is that fuzzy or fuzzy?
I don't know. You tell me.
Hey, boy, here we go. On the phone, we do have a special guest with us. He is the bass player for the band Fozzy. We have Randy Drake.
Randy, hey, what's going on, everybody? Doing good, man.
Good, good, man. Thanks for coming on the show.
Of course. Thanks for having me, dude.
So let's get to a little bit of how did you get into playing bass?
It's a weird story, man. I've been a musician since I was a kid. You know, when I was real young, I kind of fell in love with playing music. I played saxophone through my whole youth. Really took a liking to it. And I picked up guitar once I realized chicks weren't into sax players. started plucking away at that and kind of fell in love with heavy metal shred stuff. Like Yngwie Malmsteen was a fucking hero to me. I used to watch everything he did and tried to emulate him very poorly, I might add. I did that for a long time, and then I moved to Atlanta to try to take my shot at doing engineering and music and see what I can get out of it. And through a weird series of events with some guys I lived with, one of the dudes was on something. He was definitely screwed up or he was on something heavy, and he, you know, barely able to keep his eyes open kind of dude for a while. Sad, but in a kind of serendipitous way, one day he ended up breaking one of my guitars just being a dumbass. I was like, dude, of course you're not gonna be able to pay for this. You're not gonna be able to buy me another guitar. So just give me your bass. I record a lot, so I need something, you know? And I grabbed that from him. And, almost immediately after, a guy I was working with was like, hey, you don't happen to play bass, do you? I was like, actually I do now, you know, and started playing with them. And, ever since then, I've just kind of not turned back. I still love to play guitar, but bass has just been a kind of a whole new adventure for me. It definitely wasn't my forefront, but I've heard, the phrase was something along the lines of, you're either going to play guitar long enough to make it or become a bass player. It's kind of a golden rule at this point. Like it just seems to be a thing that happens, which I get it. I mean, there's a million guys out there that can outplay me on guitar and run circles around me, but there's just not a lot of bass players out there anymore. They're hard to come across apparently. So any guitar players that are struggling trying to find some work, just grab, lose two of the strings and you'll be all right. That's my advice.
And how long were you at it before you got a chance to join Fozzy, and what were the circumstances leading up to it?
Well, I mean, like I said, I've been playing for such a long time since I think at the age of 14, I started doing my own shows and started original projects and stuff. So I've been playing for a very long time and kind of gave up on the live music thing as an avenue for me. Just, you know, statistically, it makes no sense. It's such a rare chance for even the most talented guys to actually make it above the surface of mediocrity and actually get their name out there, you know. So I kind of gave up on that, but I never really stopped playing. It just wasn't an ambition to make it as a big band or be in a big band. It was just, you know, something I enjoyed doing, which I think is probably half the reason that I have been successful with it, is because I think I went into it with the right reasons. I wasn't trying to be this big famous guy. I just enjoyed playing, you know. Right. And I think that most musicians who go into it with that attitude, you kind of can't lose, you know. It's the way Chris even likes to say it, it's 10 or 10,000, you know. It's not about how many people are there. It's about you just enjoying playing and everything else will work out. You know, that's kind of the backbone of rock and roll. It's not about playing giant shows, which, I mean, yeah, it's fantastic and stuff, but it's more about just being able to make sure you enjoy yourself on stage, and it'll absolutely translate to the crowd. That people can see that, you know. I've been doing it for so long just for the sake of enjoying it. And then, weirdly enough, I found myself in a gig working at a live band karaoke here in Atlanta called Mettlesome. That it's a really cool spot. There's not everywhere I travel, I always look for these, and they're hard to find. But this one is probably the most successful one I've ever seen, for sure. Wow. And I started working up there once again through a series of very odd little circumstances that kind of played out. And that's where I met Frank, the drummer in Fozzy. He played up there as well. And once again, it's just a cool gig. It's a way to pay the bills while you're playing, you know, tunes. You know, you're playing Avril Lavigne and crap, you know, you don't really want to do. But it's, you know, people enjoy it and you have a lot of fun. But I started doing that, and I played with Frank for a couple years. And at some point or another, I think Paulie had some scheduling issues. Paul DeLeo was their old bass player. And his scheduling issues were becoming so kind of, what's the right word for it? It was just getting in the way of them trying to do anything. Like, dude, we can't book tours if you know, you're not going to be able to make these. We, you know, obviously we need you. And Frank just started kind of putting the word out there. Like, yeah, we're looking for somebody. And I was like, shit, I'll do it. I'll try out. You know, not thinking I was going to, you know, get it or anything. I just thought, well, sure, why not? And, you know, halfway through my audition songs, he just stopped and was like, you got the gig, dude. Like, you're definitely capable of doing this. And like I said, once again, very serendipitous kind of freak accidents kind of led me into that position that, you know, I feel like Mark Wahlberg and Rockstar. I'm like, I used to be the kid with these guys' pulses on my wall. Now I'm one of them. Like, I totally feel like that guy because of just the weird shit that's happened in my life that kind of put me in this. Like, it really honestly did kind of fall in my lap. But like I said, I think that a good portion of that is, you know, the energy you put out there, and just the fact that I just kind of enjoyed playing. I wasn't really doing it for any other reason than, oh, it's cool to play and I can get paid to do it, you know. I think that attitude goes a long way in the playing world and the actual traveling musician world. You know, the more bands I play with, the more I keep getting reiterated the idea that if you're just a cool dude, you enjoy yourself, you have a good attitude, good energy, and you're just having fun, that you know, you're almost always going to get the gig over the guy who's technically proficient or more technically proficient than you, and he's just kind of a dud to be around. You know, you're living with these people. You gotta bring a kind of a levity to the table that, you know, some musicians get lost in the sauce and they just want to be the cool guy and the deep, dark, melancholy kind of dude in the corner and look how fucking deep I am kind of dudes. And that gets really annoying when you're living on a tour bus with people. You're just like, dude, just can you shut up and say a joke or something? Can you not be such a fucking Debbie Downer all the time?
Well, speaking of tour buses and the road life, what has been the biggest adaptation to having to hang out with a guy like Jericho and a guy like the Duke in terms of traveling? And, you know, are you experiencing the camaraderie, or are you experiencing the ribbing and, you know, the fun that goes along with, with touring?
It's a lot of things, man. It's a mixed bag. You get a little bit of everything, and that, you know, kind of depends on the situation in the day. I mean, it's mostly we're really all just bros, man. We're on the bus. We're constantly laughing and cutting jokes. We're having a lot of fun. Like I said, that really goes a long way on the traveling world when you're touring all the time. You just want to be around. It's like a roommate, you know. You don't want to live with somebody who's just a buzzkill that just annoys you all the time. You want to be, if you're going to spend your time around somebody, you want it to be that way. But they've taken me in with open arms, and I mean, obviously, being around guys of that stature, you know, and the shit they've accomplished in their lives, it takes you for a loop at first. You kind of are, you feel like a minnow in the ocean, you know. You're kind of standing next to these kind of giants, and you're like, what the hell am I doing here? But it never felt, I guess when I first started, I definitely felt a bit of a starstruck kind of, holy shit, what am I doing? I mean, even my first show was opening up for Slash in Chicago. and I had never played with the band as a full group. I'd only played with Frank and Rich before. Mm-hmm. I'd met Billy once and I had met Chris twice before, but it was very limited. And I, you know, opening up for one of my heroes now, and I broke every touring rule in the book. I tried to grab catering before the headliners. I'm like, what the hell are you doing? I'm like, I don't know, man. I don't know what the fuck I'm doing here. You know, almost knocked over one of Slash's guitars like an asshole. Like, I really fucked up everything that day. But that first tour I did, I didn't feel like myself because I was just so kind of out of my element, not used to this. And for them, it was very routine. But like I said, they really took me in, and they showed me the ropes. They taught me a lot. And they continue to teach me about, God knows, about entertaining and performing. There's nobody better than Jericho when it comes to that stuff. And him and Rich both have just given me a masterclass in how to put on a good show. And they've imparted a lot of wisdom on me that I'll never forget. And I always try to impart that on other, you know, local bands and buddies of mine that are in bands trying to make it, and try to express some of the stuff I've learned from them. But it's, to get back to your question, it's definitely more the camaraderie stuff. I mean, we're in it together. It's a team, you know, and every night you don't know what you're walking into. Sometimes you never know what the club's going to do. You never know how the people are going to react. You don't know if the equipment's going to fail. You know, there's technical problems. And like I said, sometimes, you know, if you fuck up, you screw the pooch, you're going to hear about it, you know, and you, as you should. It's like I said, it's like a team sport. If we're playing football and I, you know, fumble the ball six times, I'm like, what the fuck are you doing, dude? Like, you got to get shit together. You know, but you get a lot of that, and there's not as much ribbing and all that as you would think. I guess I'm sure I've heard so many more stories on other tours. And once again, I think that depends on who you're with. If you get the right guys in the right room with the right amount of booze, God knows what's going to happen. You know, but they, like I said, man, they've really taken me in and shown me a lot. And I've never been in a band that I feel more like an accepted member and like a brother to these guys than I do with Fozzy in a lot of ways. You know, usually everybody's kind of trying to do their own thing. The guitar players are trying to, you know, see who can turn their shit up the loudest. They want to hear themselves better. But this is a very team effort. Like, no, we're in this together. This show depends on all of us doing this together. You know, we're always going after the show. We'll get in the green room afterwards and talk about the show. What went right? What went wrong? What could we do? Ooh, what about this? We kind of did something here. So there's a lot of that team mentality that goes into it. So it really is kind of a brotherhood. And you know, like I said, of course, there are times where, you know, I wake up and somebody's got their ass hanging out right in front of my bunk little curtain. I open up and just butt cheeks right in front of me. I'm like, fuck, man. And they just run away. And it's like, son of a bitch, just got ass.
I just got assed. There's a drop, dude, for you.
Yeah, there you go. Hi, I'm Ricky Drake, bass player for Fozzy, and I just got assed.
That's awesome, man. And obviously, I mean, you've been all over the world touring with Fozzy. There has to be a particular tour date. I know they all kind of blend together, and it's a nonstop life. But has there been any particular show, maybe it was a particular venue, maybe particular circumstances that just stands out to you as, what the fuck?
Well, yeah, I can't even come anywhere near the show we just did with Maiden. We opened up for Iron Maiden in L.A. at the Bank of California Stadium, and that was the most surreal thing I've ever experienced in my life. And it was kind of, like I said, you know, before, you don't really know what you're walking into in some shows. You don't know how the crowd's going to respond. You don't know if they're going to be cold. And I had already been kind of prepped on this. I'm like, well, first of all, it's an L.A. crowd. L.A. crowds are notoriously tough to win over if they're not there to see you. And then on top of that, obviously, we're playing with Maiden in a fucking stadium. You know, it's sold out. There's 25,000 people in there. Yeah. And the whole, I mean, at least, like, you can't really see much. You know, when the stage lights are on, they got a big spotlight right across the front, like, you know, maybe 15, 20 rows of people. And then you can't really see anything back there. And every once in a while, a spotlight come up and you'll realize, like, oh, shit, like, everywhere you look is covered with people. Like, it's not, it's not as empty as it might appear to be. It's completely covered. And like I said, you can see the whole first, like, 15 rows of people. And as soon as we walked out on stage, half the people that are in the front row, like on the gate, you know, that really want to beat up the close for May, they've been there for hours. They don't want to lose their spot. Right. And there's like some people are like taking naps and shit on the rail. And I'm like, dude, this sucks. We're walking into a shit show here, boys. And we know that. We know going into it that, like, this is going to be a tough one. And the whole show, all we're trying to do is win these people over. And what stands out to me about the show, obviously outside of the grandiose nature of all this, and, you know, playing with legends like Maiden and them having us on like that, was just the fact that I got to watch our method work. I got to see us interacting with the crowd and watching it spread. Because, like I said, they're obviously there to see Maiden, and they're diehard fans. They're the people that have been there since the doors opened and been getting crushed into the pit, you know? Mm-hmm. And watching them kind of turn over and kind of being, we see we're winning them over. And as you win one person over, they'll start getting excited and throwing their hands up. And then three or four people around them start doing it. And then the group around them start doing it. So you actually get to see your progress of what you're doing as you're going through the show, which is really cool. And that was such a large scale, you know, that obviously I've never done anything that big, and I probably won't do something that big again. I mean, hopefully it'd be fantastic, but you know, that's a once in a lifetime opportunity. And being able to see what we do and how it's working and how it's reacting with the crowd, how we're making our connection was really cool. To see it done on that kind of a scale. And I think by the end of it, we won a lot of them over. Of course, we didn't win everybody, but that's not what it's about. We went up there and just kicked ass and had fun. We had all kinds of technical props, and we didn't let that stop us from enjoying ourselves. And once again, that methodology of trying to infuse energy into the crowd and give them the energy you want them to give you, you know, was being able to see it work on a level like that or on a scale like that was really cool. And it's something I'll never forget for sure.
With that being said, let me ask you, with Jericho, were you a wrestling fan growing up? Were you aware of Chris? Were you aware of him primarily as a musician? What was your circumstances, you know, of your awareness of him before you got the opportunity to join the band?
I was never, I mean, when I was a little kid, I think one of the, for whatever reason, some memory, but I remember watching wrestling when I was a kid. I think it was like the Undertaker's first bout. Like, it was like his debut or something. Or maybe it felt like it to me. I don't know. I was a little kid. I'm an idiot at that point. I have no clue what he's doing. But I remember watching it as a kid. And I loved playing the video games growing up. It was a big part of our childhood. We had a lot of fun with that. Like NWO, WCW Revenge. Oh, my God. We wasted so many hours making, like, fucking Bill Clinton and all these people in the game and having them just fucking piss it out. But I obviously knew about Chris. I wasn't a fan of wrestling for a long time after, you know, those years as a kid playing it and being involved in it and knowing who all the people and all the players were and all that. Yeah. But I didn't really follow it for a long time. But, I mean, I don't have to follow wrestling to know who Jericho is. That guy's, you know, he's larger than life. He's everywhere. And I was obviously aware of it. And I honestly didn't know he was a musician until I started working with Frank. And he was like, yeah, I play in Chris Jericho's band, Fozzy. And I was like, oh, that's cool. I didn't know he had a band. And then, you know, of course, I started checking it out at that point because, you know, I was like, well, I'm talking with a rock star here. How do I not look into this? I wasn't really aware of it, and I wasn't that much of a fan most of my life. But I'll even admit now, man, I've been watching AEW, and I love what he's doing over there. I text him constantly when I see clips, and I'm like, you guys are really kind of changing the game over here. You're turning the old rules on their own head a little bit. And I love what the fans don't seem to know what to do with it. Like, I've seen so many videos where they just throw their hands up, like, what the hell's going on? You know, like they can't kind of believe what they're doing. Like, you're not supposed to do that. It's not how wrestling works. But like, they're eating it up. They're loving it. And I love seeing that kind of revolution kind of sweep in and the changeover of something that to me as an outsider seems like it kind of pretty much been the same thing for a long time, you know, at least with WWE. Mm-hmm. It didn't seem like there was a lot of dynamics in the way it was. It was always just kind of like, from my perspective, there's a storyline, there's the good guy, bad guy, somebody's going to turn, there's some backstabbing going on. It's a drama, you know, it's a story. And I understood all that, but even the bits I did watch, nothing felt like new to me. It just felt kind of like the same old thing over and over, just with different people. And I don't feel like that with AEW when I watch it. I'm actually entertained because I don't know what's coming. It feels new. And some of the things they're doing, these, like, I don't remember what match it was. It was just recently where he was like, there's no invisible wall in this ring, dude. I can come up there and kick your ass. And I was like, it's amazing. Like, it was absolutely taking one of these little rules that has just been a thing. Like, you're not supposed to do it. They have the cameras up there or whatever. And they're just like, fuck that. Let's just do it. Let's make it like it's a real thing. Like, it feels more real at that point to me than it doesn't feel so scripted, you know? Mm-hmm. Which, right. Like I said, I think I'm becoming a fan now because the more I watch, the more I'm entertained by it, which just didn't seem to really happen with me with WWE for some reason. Like I said, I think it just felt kind of stale after a while. Like, I felt like I know what's going to happen. One of these guys is going to get fucking turn around, dude's gonna slap him in the back of the neck, he's gonna seizure on the ground for a while, and then, you know, whatever happens after that. But nothing really felt exciting about it, you know. It just was like, all right, they're just gonna tell me what's happening. AEW just keeps surprising me, which I like that. I've like I said, I've texted him multiple times being like, dude, I love what you're doing over here.
Do you think,
yeah, not much of a wrestling fan growing up, not at all.
Do you think that what you've seen as a performer on stage with Chris and the scenario you just went over with having to go in front of that huge crowd and win them over. And essentially, you know, what's interesting about Fozzy is that the band's 20 years old, and essentially every gig you play, you're trying to win over fans.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you think that you know, Chris has learned through the years of what exactly it takes to feel out a crowd and draw off of what kind of energy to use, what kind of method to use to bring them to life.
I mean, obviously he's poured it over a lot of his skills, his mic work skills, his crowd work skills over from wrestling, which is very apparent to me, even not being a wrestling fan or knowing his career as well as most people do. I can obviously see the same tactics and the same methods that he uses, that he's developed these over the years. They're not, you can't do the same tricks, and he does a very interesting job of trying to separate the wrestling from the band while we're playing. And some of the shit he does, man, I swear he's like a fucking magician. I've never seen somebody have such control over a crowd with, I swear to God, just a wag of his finger. Yep. He'll just put his finger there and just give it a little wag. He'll just tap, 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 and they all start chanting Fozzy. And I'm like, how the hell do you do that? He goes, I don't know, dude. They just do it. Like, he's just out. If he just wags his fucking finger, they start chanting their name. And I'm like, this is incredible. Like, nobody has... I've been to 1,000 concerts. I've hardly ever hear somebody getting their name chanted. If they're not the headliner, if they're not, you know, if they're not some huge band, nobody chants the band names.
Yeah.
And he even said, like, Fozzy's such a good name to chant. It's easy. It's Fozzy. It's two syllables. He's thought about everything. And that's what I'm saying. Like, he's ported so much of his knowledge from wrestling and how to work crowds and all of that stuff. And he brought it into a music element, and it translated incredibly well. It's effective. It works. You know, like I said, we've done shows where maybe 20 people show up. It's just a bad day, bad spot, or in a town that, you know, it's like a travel town during the summer, and then nobody's there during the winter or whatever. And people just eat the shit up, you know? And it's like, we don't depend on the energy of the crowd to get us going. We bring our own, you know, we supply the energy for the crowd. We're just trying to give you enough so you start giving it back. And that's where I think his true mastery of crowd work has, that's where it shines the most, in the way that we can come into it, like at the Maiden gig, we can come into a cold room and we just start working them, and we start winning them over one at a time. And it's these little interactions that, and I'm sure you guys have the same experience. We've been to a concert of a band you love, and the guy gives you the point, or he just makes eye contact. We're like, dude, I'm never going to forget that. You know, people from the 60s are, you know, still talking about, oh, Paul McCartney farted in a subway next to me. I'll never forget it. It's like the little connections you have with people, that shit sticks forever. You don't forget that stuff, especially if you're a fan, you know, and watching him work, like I said, it's been, I've been going through a master class with these guys on how to put on a show and how to entertain people, especially with music. Because I've known so many bands and so many, you know, musicians over the years that I watch them play, and I'm like, it's just the same thing like I talked about with the WWE, where it felt like it's just the same thing. You guys are just up there trying to look cool, and yeah, like, you got good tunes and stuff, but you're not, this is a show. If I wanted to hear your tunes, I'd buy your record. I want to see you guys perform. You know, I want to see you guys have some energy and put on a show. It is a show, you know?
Right.
And the music alone, for me, doesn't do it. I feel like I need you to do something. You know, I can't stand being on stage and just, you know, shoegazing. I can't do that. I can't help myself but to dance around a little bit, you know?
Sure.
Which, you know, when I say dance around, I mean throw my head around like I'm having a fucking seizure and give myself whiplash. But, you know, it's dancing nonetheless in my mind. And I just can't help myself. I got to do something. Like I said, I've gotten so accustomed to bringing all this energy to the table when I get on stage that it just happens now. I don't have to. I could be, you know, like I'm fucking well proper hungover today, but if you gave me a bass and told me I need to go play, dude, I'm up there fucking killing it. I can't help myself. I'll be sick as fuck, but I'm going to go up there and do it, you know? And that's another mentality of those guys, is there's no such thing as quit, man. I think there was a show Rich Ward had, like, his appendix burst on stage. Finish the gig. He kept fucking playing. He's like rolling around on the ground in pain. His appendix is in pieces inside his body, someone's floating around. And he's up there fucking kicking ass. Like that kind of shit, you can't just tell somebody that. You have to just try to embody that attitude of like, nah, dude, I'm putting on a fucking show, you know?
Hell yeah, man. That's pretty amazing, dude. And just the commitment, like what you're describing, it's unfathomable. I mean, as you're sitting here telling that story, obviously, I had to close my eyes because I had to try to picture it. Dude, holy shit, man.
Well, and even then, think about wrestling, man. How many times have you seen, like, I know there's, I don't remember who it was, but there was a video, somebody jumped off the top rope, and his leg just turned into dust.
Yes.
Like, all the bones shattered, and it was awful to look at. And, like, they got to figure shit out. The show goes on. Like, you can't just say, all right, time out, everybody. We got a hurt guy out here. You got to play it off somehow, you know?
Yeah, the show always goes on, man. One thing that that you actually have coming up at the end of January is going to be the Chris Jericho Rockin' Wrestling Rager at Sea Part 2.
Hell yes.
How
well? Yes.
I personally will be on board. And
Hell yeah, dude.
I can't wait. It's going to be just one hell of a time. Have you performed in any venue like that, or, you know, anything that's even close to, you know, on a cruise ship sailing to the Bahamas?
Well, I've actually done a couple of these cruises now. Yeah, Fozzy, we did the Jericho cruise last year, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we did the Kiss Cruise 5, I think it was.
Yeah.
That was my first one. And then I did one, I played with Stuck Mojo with Rich as well. Nice. And we did a 70,000 tons of metal cruise with them.
Hell yeah.
Once. I'm kind of used to the cruise life. It's interesting being out there, especially if you're a fan, which is really cool because they're on the boat, like everybody you love that you want to see, they're on the boat somewhere, and you run in, you'd be shocked at how many times you bump into people, you know?
Yeah,
especially with Chris. Excuse me, when he's on that boat, man, he works his ass off. He is constantly doing something, but he's having a great time. It doesn't look like work to him. It genuinely is his cruise. I mean, like, everything on that boat is something he loves, or people he loves, or people he has good connections with that entertain him. Like, you feel that. Like I said, he gives off that energy that he's having a great time. It's like being at somebody's birthday party and they're just having the fucking best time of their lives. Like, you can't help, it's contagious, you know? And being in a situation like that, like, especially when the Jericho cruise we did before was the first time I had experienced the true power of wrestling fans being able to not only just be the camaraderie with it, but also the ability to make up a fucking chant, like an ant hive, like a hive mind, on the fucking spot. It's unbelievable, man. Like, a guy would trip, like, you tripped like an asshole and you fucking suck. You tripped like an asshole and you fucking suck. Like, how the fuck, did you guys rehearse this shit? But there was even a point we were docked, I think it was the Bahamas, we were docked up, and it was like the fucking John Mayer cruise boat or something next to us. Every fucking wrestling fan was on the talk deck going, you suck, you suck, like having a tail war with another cruise ship. I was like, I've never seen anything like this in my life, man. But it was one of the most fun experiences I've ever had, man. What I remember of it, at least.
Right.
it was so much fun. And it wasn't even just fun for us, man. I know a lot of people that work on the cruise. They're all Atlanta-based people. And as they're working the boat, you know, the Norwegian Cruise Line, the backline companies, everybody who was involved in production for the boat, whatever, said this is the best cruise they've ever done. Huh. Out of all the theme cruises, out of all of them, this was the smoothest. It was the most fun. It was the least amount of troublemakers and problems, which, once again, is a testament to the wrestling community and the fans of it, and the way that there was no assholes. I didn't see one drunk, belligerent dude trying to fight somebody. I didn't see any of that. Everyone was just having a good fucking time. And that really stuck out to me that, you know, out of all the gatherings of people you can get for a local thing, if it's, you know, like the Kiss cruise, I saw plenty of people on there that could give two shits. They were just like, I want to see Kiss, and you can fuck off. Like, everyone on this boat was just having a fucking blast, man. And it was just a good fucking time, man. And too, obviously, you know, once again, you're walking in the Valley of Giants with all these huge names and these people that were just such clout that, like, you're just kind of taken away by it. Like, you'll be eating buffet and you'll see fucking DDP over there eating some fucking, you know, chicken or something. Like, what the fuck is this? Like, how the fuck did I find myself in this situation where these dudes that I used to watch on TV or just hanging out, eating food around me? Like, this is fucking nuts. It was cool, man. Like I said, being a fan of wrestling and being in that environment, it's got to be one of the coolest experiences as a fan of something like that, to be just completely immersed in that with nothing. Everybody around you is just as in love with it as you are. So it really is such a good time. And I was happy to hear it. It sold out really fast this time. And for good reason, man. Like, it honestly is one of the funnest things I've ever done, was that first cruise. We had such a blast. Even the performances we did, you know, we've done our set so many times that it feels very routine to us, because, you know, when you're on tour, it's like you said, it's day in, day out the same shit. It all kind of blurs together. It feels like a Groundhog Day,
right?
And it got to a point where, you know, on the boat, we did an entire cover set dressed in costumes and shit. And it was just such a fucking good time. We had a blast.
That's awesome.
It was awesome, man. Yeah, it's definitely something I'm looking forward to. I'm glad I'll see you guys there too, man. It's going to be a good time. You can really enjoy it.
Definitely, man.
Well, you'll at least see one of us.
Yeah,
the rest of us couldn't get in on those tickets because it sold out so quick.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's true. Well, shit. Who's going again?
Sin City Steve.
There you go, Steve. Me and you were drinking it up on first night, bro.
I am down, brother. I am down.
So thinking of Fozzie and when it started, and it started pretty much as a cover album for the first album, and Chris came up with the persona of Mongoose McQueen. If that was still a thing, what would your persona be?
Oh, God, who knows? I'd probably be somewhere in there with, like, Lexi from Steel Panther. I'd be some pretty boy with hairspray and mirrors all around me or something. More than likely, it'd either be that or I'd just be a fucking dirtbag. Like, Dirtbag Jones would be my name or something. I'd be like, fucking, what was Pigpen from Charlie Brown Used Flies and dirt and shit falling around the ground. That's probably me. I believe I might be the stinkiest human on those buses when we were on fucking tour, man. I smell like a bag of old onions.
Oh, man, that's a t-shirt right there.
Right. Yeah, that's it. See, that's what I'm saying. Dude, I can brand the shit out of this Stinky Joe thing.
Yeah.
Hell yeah, dude.
Now we got to get that to Chris.
There we go. Stinky Joe. Yeah, he'll know about it now. Yeah, I'll let him know. Hey, man, sorry, dude. We're going back to the personas. I'm Stinky Boy Joe. I got fucking expired potatoes on me at all times to explain my stench. That's it. It was probably, my name will be Spud. There we go.
Spud.
Spudsy Brown.
Oh my God. That's actually like, yeah, that's like so Spinal Tap. That's just brilliant.
Well, that's perfect. That was the whole gimmick, right?
Yeah.
The whole fucking persona thing it was a very Spinal Tappy situation.
Yep. Yeah, they did. But one of the coolest things that they did was a video, like a, you know, 20-minute documentary type thing.
Yeah, the little mockumentary thing?
Oh, yeah, where he was in character as Mongoose the whole time and the other guys were in character. Oh, man, it's just, you know, it's brilliant.
My favorite thing is the whole idea that they wrote every hit song for the last, like, 30 years and everyone just kept robbing them. That was the best.
Oh, yeah, man. It's the creativity is amazing. And speaking of... what kind of creative things do you have your foot into? Are you writing your own songs? Are you writing anything that you might propose to the guys in Fozzie?
I'm an engineer as well. I came to Atlanta to pursue engineering. Like I said before, the music thing was something I kind of gave up on. I realized statistically it was like I had just about as much of a chance as a kid playing football making it to the NFL, you know, if not less. To try to make it to something. So I went into full bore into engineering and recording and producing. I've always had a fascination with writing music, and I love writing music. It's definitely my favorite way to spend my time. And I've got a bunch of little solo stuff that you know, I've got with a couple different people that I'm trying to work on that. I, once again, I'm not doing it so much for I want to start a band, I want to perform all the time, I want to make money. It's like I just like writing music with talented people and having fun jamming and getting ideas out. And with Fozzie, we have a good system of, you know, any ideas you have, toss them. I mean, I think everybody in the band has recording capabilities to some degree. And, you know, I send in full tracks with full production and shit because I, you know, like I said, I'm not doing it to try to get a song on the record necessarily. It's like, it's just a song I wrote that maybe you guys like a piece of it or something that we can use. Maybe there's something usable inside this or salvageable. And we all kind of channel them in through a funnel and it gets reviewed at the top by you know, all the people that are calling the shots with this. It's definitely not this guy, trying to call what we're going to do and what our sound is, what direction we're going and all that stuff. But it's kind of a shotgun tactic. You when you go into writing a record with almost anybody, I think anybody in the industry could kind of agree, you really just got to throw noodles at the wall and see what sticks and kind of what catches your ear. And you never know what's going to work. You never know. You know, I even think with the success of Judas kind of took us by surprise. I mean, we obviously knew it was a good song and everything, but you just never know how well it's going to be received or how it's going to pick up and how fast. And Judas fucking skyrocketed immediately, which was, you know, a, an, a fortunate surprise. It was a good surprise. You know, not to say we didn't believe in it or anything. It was just a matter of once something like that happens, you just got to fucking hang on and try to ride that wave as long as you can. And that's where that shotgun tactic comes in, because, you know, you countless times through the, you know, last 50 years of music, hit songs have come out of the B-side of records that nobody really thought would be a hit at all. And then right. It just fucking picks up, you know. It's really hard to try to zero in, unless you're fucking, what's his name, that Swedish guy who did all those boy bands in the 90s. Unless you're him, you pretty much have no putting your finger on a hit, you know. But that guy's fucking got it. Him and fucking Mutt Lange got it figured out. But if, you know, it's, you just don't know. So yeah, we all contribute as much as we can, and, you know, maybe it makes the cut, maybe it doesn't, you know. And because you're doing it in such volume, it usually doesn't make the cut, which is cool, you know. And like I said, for me, it's less about, you know, I want to write a hit song and put it on the record. That'd be great if it happened, but really I just enjoy writing music and doing my own thing. You know, I've a whole metal project of it's a cartoon that I'm working on, that's a band called Hammered Lightning. That their singer is a wizard that gets his powers when he gets hammered drunk. it's a whole fucking thing. And there's a lot of good jokes. There's a lot of good inside music jokes you can throw into something like that. But I didn't start doing that to you know, I want to start a show. It just became out. Me and a buddy started writing some power metal. And then another guy came over and I was like, you want to sing some vocals? And we wrote a bunch of fart jokes, basically, and fucking put a shred track. And it was hilarious. And we're like, well, fuck, we got to keep doing this. And we built this whole fucking thing out of it and turned into an entire season's worth of material that, you know, all we got to do is now just animate it and it's ready to go.
Wow.
But there's that. Once again, that's not me doing this to, I want to start a band, I want to have a show. It's like, I just think this is funny. I think it's funny when we go to the chorus and a fucking music cuts and a fucking hot fart drops on the mic and then it cuts right back in. Like, that's hilarious to me for some reason. I'm like, kid about it. But like, I just want to keep doing that shit. I just want to keep giggling and laughing with my friends and making music, you know? So yeah, it's interesting being in a situation like this, to have the platform that Fozzy does and the stature we do in the music world as we have it now, and especially with Chris and Rich and having them on board. And it's very interesting trying to approach the music writing process, realizing the gravity of, like, this isn't just me, you know, writing a tune for shits and giggles. Like, this could potentially be a fucking song on the record that could actually do something for us, you know?
Right.
So it almost gets in the way. It's like performance anxiety almost, because you hit that record button and you just hope something good comes out. And, you know, you don't, once again, you don't know if it's going to be good. You don't know if it'll be received well. You might think it's hot crap, you know, and then you show it to everyone else and like, oh, this is the greatest fucking song I've ever heard. And you just don't know.
Right.
So it almost, you get in your head a little bit when you start writing in this kind of circumstance where you know that the potential for it to take off and be something big that you can slap your name on is pretty heavy. And like I said, you get a little bit of performance anxiety, like, well, fuck, is it good enough? Should I work on it harder? Should I do this part differently? You almost lose the flow of creativity trying to think about it too much, you know?
Right. No, that makes a lot of sense. Really quick, favorite all-time band?
For me, it's a band called Symphony X. They're a little more on the obscure side. They never really had a lot of commercial success, but that band, for whatever reason, I think I liked them so much when I was a kid, because like I said before, I was a huge fan of Yngwie Malmsteen, because I was a big classical fan. I love, like, the, you know, romantic era of music, Bach, Beethoven, all the fucking Little Wayne's of the classical world, the big guys that drop some fucking heat. I used to love that music so much and that sound.
Yeah.
And when I found Yngwie, I was like, wait, this guy fucking rips dick on guitar and he plays classical music? This is fucking awesome. And then I found Michael Romeo, the guitar player in Symphony X, and I was like, wait, this is like Yngwie Malmsteen, but he's clean and he's proficient and he has like technical ability. He's not just a sloppy fucking shredder.
Yeah.
Like, it blew me away. I didn't know what to do with it. And once again, I tried to learn all his shit and I still haven't figured out how to play his parts properly, but I tried horribly. And fail every time I do, cause he's just so fucking talented. But yeah, that was always my go-to band. But I'm a weird musician, and anyone in Fozzy can tell you this. They constantly, I've always been impressed with Chris and Rich and Frank and all them, is they're fucking music encyclopedias. They know every guy that was on every record at what era, who produced it, what label they were on. They fucking know everything. They were sleeve junkies, man. They used to read every fucking liner note. They knew everything about it, which is cool to talk to them about. But then they'll start saying, oh, well, this band's got Joe Schmo and this guy, and I'm like, who the fuck is that? I'm like, you don't know? This guy used to fucking water pump a car with flowers. And they're like, how the fuck am I supposed to know that, dude? I'm like, I don't read this shit. I don't read Obscure Music Monthly. Like, I don't know what the fuck this dude is. But they just fucking know, man. They know everybody, and it's, I'm just not that guy. I don't know. If you play me a song, I can hear it in 5 years after hearing it once and go, I've heard this song. Like, I've got a very good musical memory. But when it comes to lyrics or fucking who's in what band, I have no fucking clue half the time. And I think because of that, I don't really have a lot of bands that I latch on to, because as an engineer and a producer, it's hard to enjoy music as I used to, because I pick it apart, you know.
Right.
In the same way, I'm pretty sure Chris doesn't fucking, he doesn't get excited when he watches a wrestling match. He's just like, he's analyzing. He's watching what they're doing. Right. He's watching the perform. He's breaking down the performance. And I do the same thing. So it's really hard for me to find a band that just consistently does that. It's almost like watching a movie where you can't suspend the disbelief enough, where the whole time you're like, ah, fucking come on, nobody would do that. You know, when I listen to music or when I watch bands, I kind of feel that same way, where I'm like, why on God's earth would you use that shitty fucking keyboard patch at this part? Why wouldn't you do this? Why wouldn't you do that? Like, I'm always thinking about, what are you doing here? What I think you could have done. And it, like I said, it kind of gets in the way of just enjoying music. But Symphony X is one of those bands that could just do no wrong by me. Everything they did was just, it was perfect, you know, and it always excited me. Every time they dropped an album, I was on it. You know, and even a funny story. I have a kind of a 9 degrees from Kevin Bacon situation with Michael Romeo, the guitar player, because Rich was in Adrenaline Mob with Russell, the singer for Symphony X. And even that, like I said, been a huge fan, and I was talking to Rich about it, and I was talking to him about Symphony X or something, and he said, oh, yeah, you know, me and Russell go way back, blah, blah, blah. I was like, Russell who? He goes, the fucking singer in the band you're talking about, you love. He's fucking good, man. He's got a good voice. Like, what the hell's your problem, dude? How do you not know this dude's fucking name?
That's awesome, man.
I'm just a fucking idiot when it comes to that stuff, man. I don't know. Like I said, I'll remember every fucking note he plays, but to ask me his fucking name or how old he is, I have no fucking clue, dude.
Well, that the final point here I want to just bring up is, your last name is Drake. We have a man here in DJ Impact who thinks Drake is just the sweetest thing in the world. Can you tell him why Drake's music sucks?
Easy now, easy. Well,
that's not something you can explain in the same way you can't explain to a child why they shouldn't, you know, pick their butt and lick their finger, you know? Wow. Like, it's not something you can teach. It's something you just have to figure out on your own. You got to go down the journey yourself. I can coach you. I can tell you his fucking samples suck. He's cheesy. He's got a weird hairline. Anything like that. It doesn't fucking matter. You got to find that one out on your own, bud.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, I'm just kidding. Honestly, man, you have to see. I'll admit, Drake actually writes some pretty catchy shit. Like, I've learned with pop music, you can't look at integrity, you can't look at you know, content. You just have to, do you bob your head to it? Does it make a girl want to shake her ass? Great, it's a good tune, you know.
Right.
But I will say, I do respect him. He seems like a really nice dude. He's one of the few guys in that community that I think can kind of put the mirror on himself and make fun of himself a little bit and show a little humility, which is rare in the music world. When you get to a status like that, it's almost like politicians. You can't say you're wrong. You can never say you fucked up. You can never say, you can't admit fault in anything. You have to just deflect, you know?
Right.
And I think that he's one of the few guys that can kind of take his ego aside for a second and go, yeah, I was kind of fucking dumb, wasn't it? You know?
Awesome. Well, look here, Randy, as we wrap up now, is there anything that you want to promote, maybe concert dates of Fozzy, or even your own personal social media sites or anything like that?
Well, you can always follow me at on Instagram. It's the only real social media I use.
Okay.
I'm on there as The Randy Drake, and I know that sounds pretentious, but some other ding-dong named Randy Drake took the easy one, and I'm like a fucking asshole, and I'm not going to put numbers behind my fucking tag name, because that's the dummies.
Right.
But yeah, we've actually got a show coming up next week at the Freeman Coliseum in San Antonio in Texas.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Should be a good show. I mean, fucking, like I said, we're going to bring the heat no matter who shows up. So it's going to be a good time for us. So, you know, anybody in the area, we'd love you to come out.
Yes.
Obviously, the Jericho Cruise, if you're lucky enough to have a ticket at this point, badass. I'll see you on the boat and we'll fucking get a drink together.
Hell yeah.
If you don't, sorry, shit out of luck. Buy one next year, I guess.
Damn. Damn you, Den City Steve.
Yeah, fucking Steve. Let's go, dude. We're going to get fucking tore up on this bad boy, dude.
I'm down, brother.
You ever been on a cruise?
No.
Oh.
I'm gonna bring some fucking Dramamine and try to find one of those little clear plastic bladders and bring some booze, bud, because it's expensive as piss.
Yeah, yeah. I was looking at some of the pricing.
Buy a drink ticket.
Yeah.
It is worth it, my friend. But yeah, man, just this show's coming up. Follow me on Instagram. And other than that, man, I'll see you guys on the road next year when we get rocking.
That's awesome. Thanks for hanging out with us, Randy. We appreciate it.
Dude, of course. Thanks for having me, man. I really appreciate this.
No doubt, y'all. Randy Drake.
Vegas,
Bad Boys
of Podcasting, holding you down since day one, January 2019.
The hottest podcast in the universe.
There's like 1,000 podcasts.
Vegas Bad Boys, day one, say.
Different, thoughts, outrageous,
interview,
exciting,
interesting,
intriguing,
amazing,
funny, intergalastic.
Bad Boys.
If you haven't listened to all of our podcasts, take a listen of what you might have missed. JTG.
Shad and I. Shad was the big guy. Is it the same size? One is a little bit fatter, right?
Yeah.
One is cut. Yeah. One is kind of like pudgy.
Yeah, that's Angelo. Oh,
yeah. Well, I guess it's kind of similar to me, Shad. Yeah, I'm kind of like the...
Al Snow.
Well, yeah, I did. I actually wrote a book. I also, just so you guys know, I do magic for the blind.
Wow.
My way of giving back to the community, yeah. You know, is let me tell you, it's like, is this your card? And it's like, I don't know. And you're like, it is. Ta-da.
Like, oh my God, Jeff Cobb.
You know, I don't plan to wrestle into my late 40s or 50s or 60s or 70s. Like, you know, but, you know, again, I say that now, but.
Right.
it's like the weirdest addiction ever, you know? Like,
yeah, we know. B. Brian Blair.
All of a sudden, I look in the mirror and Terry's, you know, spanking his Woody on top of the back of Coco's ass. And his pants ripped, and I'm going, oh my gosh, man, we're going to prison.
Vicky Guerrero.
You know, you are definitely, in our minds, a Hall of Famer. Because
I'll give you $5 later, guys.
Phil Landers.
How do you guys do this? Are you guys in like a recording studio, or are you guys in a home studio?
Hey, you don't contact WWE Creative and ask them how they write Raw, do you?
We're
all in a bathroom.
We're in a right bathroom. Yeah, we're in a bathhouse. We're
in a bathtub.
You're in a bathhouse.
Yeah.
RVD.
If I hit a squirrel with my car, it would totally ruin my day. I mean, I'd get out of the car and I'd try to save it, you know. And
Selena De La Renta.
When you say Selena at work, Selena in real life, it's about the same. It's a preparation for my everyday life. It's about the same my preparation for MLW. The only thing is I need twice the amount of makeup and probably tighter dresses. But
Nick Aldis.
I do love Vegas, and you know what's funny is that, like, the first time I went was actually for TNA when I debuted with the Main Event Mafia. I'd never been to Vegas before then.
Wow.
But in many ways, it's really the showbiz capital of America.
Yep.
You know, like, there's so much show business going on there all the time. I just love that vibe.
Vegas Bad Boys, a podcast, has over 50 interviews, and they keep on coming. Make sure you subscribe. Keep listening. Write a review about our podcast. Come to our live events. Participate in our contest. Like our social media. And most importantly, tell all your family and friends about us. We're Vegas born, and we are Vegas Bad Boys of Podcasting.